Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, talking all things cricket, from club cricket to million-pound franchises to the Test Match Arena, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.
Welcome to the Down at Third Man podcast, and we're on to episode 13. Today we're a bit different. We've got one of us in the Isle of Wight, which is me. We've got one in the parish, which is Jono. We've got a guest coming from, I want to say Baddeley Green, but I might be wrong. I'm sure we'll confirm in a minute. So hopefully all the boys are all right and looking forward to cricket restarting, because I'd imagine everyone has got a friendly lined up this weekend. I know a few people had friendlies last weekend lined up, but the snow got in the way. So we'll get on to the boys in a minute. But before we do, we've got, to as always, give a big shout out to Woodstock Cricket, who support us. They've had a bit of a rebrand on all their bats, sent loads and loads of photos out. They're looking really, really good. And I can confirm they are really good bats, because even I've managed to hit a few to the boundaries in training with one. So they must have superpowers. But if you want to get some kit, get yourselves onto their website, get ordering, and make sure you use our discount code to save you a few pounds. Right. As always, I've got Jono with me. The other lad from the parish, the ginger one, is apparently quite sozzled in the pub still. Well, in the club, should we say. He claims that his excuses is that he's helping his missus who's working behind the bar, but I'm guessing Gina probably ain't getting much help from him. So, first of all, Jono, how are you, and what state was Aid in?
Can confirm all of the above, mate. Can confirm.
What state are you in?
Mary.
Mary. We like Mary.
We're doing takeouts. That's the best thing about today. We're doing takeouts. We've had a great day and we're doing takeouts.
That's what I like to hear. And you're also drinking Budweiser, which I've got a load of stick for being my choice of drink at the pub this dinner time. But when it's that old Solo Foster's, you haven't got much choice, have you, really? Not good. Right, our guest today is, I'm not going to say how many times he's won the Prem, because I don't actually know, but I know it's numerous times. It is Port Hill captain, John Hancock. How are we, John?
Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on, mate.
Are you as drunk as the rest of us or not?
No.
There's time, though.
Yeah, I just got in from junior training, mate. So I've just opened my first bottle. So looking forward to the chat.
Good. And looking forward to the season, I assume, as well. You had a bit of snow, didn't you, on Saturday?
Yeah, definitely, mate. I was just going to pick up on what you said. We were due to play Nantwich on Saturday. And their lads were ringing, texting, saying what's going on. So it was fine down here. And they got there and they weren't there for very long, put it that way. So yeah, it was a shame, but we've got another one lined up this weekend with the first and second sort of mixed together. So hopefully, yeah, we'll get out on the grass and then move Modish our first game of the season on the 24th.
Good. We've got an in-house family, and I think you boys at Big Land are playing Little Stoke, aren't you,
John? Yeah, we're at home against Little Stoke. Looking forward. Aid's captaining on Saturday. That's the only thing I'll say. That's the.
You are kidding me.
No, he's got eight men currently. He said
well,
he reckoned
he
could. No, I'm playing, mate. I'm just having
a day off.
I'd love to say that what I'm doing is I'm just surveying from the sidelines and just take the pressure off myself and just survey how everyone's getting on for a pre-season friendly. But realistically, I can't be arsed.
Fair enough. Makes sense. Mm. Right then, what we'll do, boys, is before we get into all the North Staffs lot that's going to probably take up most of tonight's podcast, we'll have a little quick look at what's been going on in world cricket. I'm sure there seems to have been quite a lot of controversial stuff over the last few days, so I'm sure we'll pick up on some of that. But we'll start off with the biggest competition in the world, as it is called, the IPL. First of all, have either of you watched much of it over the last, well, over the weekend?
I watched. Saw a little bit towards the end yesterday, and I picked up on the result today. Must admit, love watching the IPL. Entertainment-wise, I think it is well justified to be the biggest competition in the world, biggest T20 club competition. I just noticed that Samson's at 119, 120 yeah. today, only out of chasing 220, which not too shabby, really, to be on a losing side and getting 120. It's not going to be happy, I don't think.
Bit of a skipper's knock, although I must admit, next to last ball, turns down the single to Chris Morris.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, turned it down, so still needed five to win, and getting caught on the long off boundary, not literally 2 yards short.
Turner, he'd got 120 off 60 balls, mate. If you can't back yourself when you've got 120 off 60,
when you're
I don't think there's ever...
Well, yeah. It was a fat Chris Morris that, what is he, £1.5 million man or whatever he is, was stood down the other end, like, shaking his head, like, saying, why not? Why not? It was quite clear why not, isn't it? This lad's smoking them all out of the place.
But and the thing about that competition is invariably the very close games. There's very few games that, you know, someone gets hammered. Like last night's game, I think Mumbai's game went to the last ball, didn't it? And then obviously today's was close. Like I say, I haven't seen any of it, just seen the scorecard, but brilliant entertainment, really.
Yeah, I think that's where it's better than the Big Bash. The Big Bash I like, but there's very few close games. You normally know who's won going into the last over, I would say. So, just to quickly run through the results, RCB beat the champions, Mumbai Indians.
My Dally tip, Cap- mate, I'm just throwing it out there. We're one game in, but my tip, the RCB. Yeah.
They're your team, RCB?
Absolutely not, no, but everyone else seems to be writing him off, and I just like to be a bit of a dick when it comes to stuff like that. So, I'm just going against the grain there, which is very much in my character.
Delhi Capitals beat CSK. I'm sure you want to make a comment about CSK's ageing squad. And MS Dhoni's two-ball duck, surely.
It's like it's watching Big Line second team, mate. Aging and inept. That's about it.
It's surprising they went the way they did this time because they didn't have a good year last year, did they? And they've sort of got a similar group of players. I think they're going to end up where they did last year, to be honest. But Delhi's my team. I like Delhi.
We had a discussion on our group chat, mate, and we said exactly the same thing. It's almost like... you know, a football team that just can't let go?
Yeah.
Like a Notts Forest in the early 2000s. Yeah. We just can't let go, so we're going to keep all of these ageing players on.
Yeah.
On a shitload of money.
Yeah.
Puzzling.
Yeah.
But yeah, Delhi must be one of the early favourites because, I mean, they won easy. And, like, you just look at that team and, fuck me, Steve Smith should not get a game at all for them.
Mm.
Let's be honest, Chris Wokes probably won't get many more games.
And
Kieran Rabada coming.
The captain was missing, wasn't he? Are you? Is it?
Yeah, he's out, isn't he?
They basically got the one thing that we said the other day is they were that good that they won, and they basically had half of the first choice 11 not playing.
Yeah.
That were literally on the bench.
Yeah.
That was probably the most frightening thing of the whole bit, really, I'd say.
Well, I think the most worrying bit was that Prithvi Shaw gave every club cricketer who can't be asked to turn up to training like evidence to say that they're fine to not net, because he's been telling punter he ain't getting net for the last 2 weeks because he's in bad form, and then it's 72 or 38 balls. I mean, I'm trying to get more people to come training on a Tuesday and Wednesday, and I've got absolutely no hope if they see that. Jesus. KKR then went and beat Sunrisers in a half-decent game. KKR, I think they'll nip fourth spot this year, to be fair. Owen Morgan didn't do much, but Nitish Rana with 80. Dinesh Kartik, turns out he's not just good at commentating, he's quite a good finisher as well.
Old man, mate.
Loves it. And he's been announced on the 100 as well, hasn't he, today? So he's had a good couple of paydays, it seems. And then today, Punjab Kings won. I dare say Punjab Kings and Rajasthan will probably still be in the bottom two or three teams, but good game to watch still. KL Rahul got 91 and then dropped an absolute clanger. Chris Gayle, Jono's favourite man with a long handle, 40 today. I don't think we'll talk about Ben Stokes because wasn't really a good day at the office for Stokes.
He
got a third ball duck, was it, opening the batting, and went for 12 off one over, and that was his contribution. I think he took a catch, but I think he also dropped one as well, which sums up Ben Stokes, don't it, to be fair, but his fielding's hit and miss. But yeah, the IPL's been a good start. And then obviously County Champ, lots of live streaming, three winners, Gloucestershire, Somerset, and then Hampshire. Somerset was a great comeback, but let's be honest, all anyone wants to talk about is the stumping that wasn't a stumping, that was given as a stumping. First of all, can you imagine before live streaming, that wouldn't have even been known about? But what
about
make...
to say this, you know. So who was it? There was a reporter who was on that straight away the other day, weren't there? Like, no one would be mentioning the county cricket scene as an uproar about a wicketkeeper basically blatantly cheating, and no one had known anything about it before this year.
Yeah.
The tricky thing is with that, like, it all happens so... It's like any kind of decision-making. It all happens so fast, doesn't it? And he obviously took the stumps with the wrong hand. I think after he's done that, his biggest fault is that he didn't then say, right, this is wrong, that isn't out. I think he went along with it. You know, in the moment, I can sort of understand why it happened, because things happen quite quickly. But if he takes a step back and think, I'm sure he'd go back and change how he acted after that.
We all know it, though, don't we? We all know it, playing enough like team sport. If you're because I saw some journalist who was absolutely hammering the people who were at slip and short leg and the bowler and stuff like, oh, they'd have known. But honestly, as someone who generally stands at mid on, mid off, I'd have had no idea. I mean, you generally stand at slip, John, don't you?
Yeah.
You'd have had absolutely zero interest.
I still had to watch it four or five times. Yeah. No, I'd got on the first place.
So you can just imagine it now. If we put ourselves in the position, we're all playing on Saturday in a friendly or the first league game next week, and we say, right, buddy Al, and you're that one person who knows that something dodgy's gone down, and you've now got 10 people plus a couple of batsmen and umpires who are like basically like, oh yeah, fucking brilliant, it sounds. You're not going to say a word, and just the win at all cost mentality that's there, it just takes over. You don't realise what you're doing. It's not exactly red mist, but it's kind of like a grey mist. Your mind's absolutely fuzzled. You want to win the game.
Yeah.
You're right. It's just taking him over. It's absolutely shocking. I might add that. But
it is, yeah. Well, I just think, you know, having been not in that position particularly, but we've all been in that kind of position, you know, and you think, should I, shouldn't I, sort of thing, after the event. And I think, if he goes back to that situation, 99 times out of 100, he'd say, you know, that's not out. You know, yeah. I've took the bail with the wrong hand or whatever it might be, you know, and just own up to it. But like you say, when you want to win, some things take over you that, you know, sometimes you can't control.
I had to actually check the rule, by the way. It's bizarre. This is mad, isn't it? This just goes to show how much we probably don't know the ins and outs of the rules. But I genuinely thought that as long as he had it in a hand, he could actually break the stumps with whichever hand he wanted. But apparently that's only if his hands are together.
Together, yeah.
Now, I know that might sound like a bit of a technicality, and I'm not trying to defend him, by the way, because it was pretty shit. So it was red card behaviour. He's a shithouse, basically, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
But I did have to check myself, so I will defend him on that one.
Yeah, the one person I sort of feel sorry for out of it as well is obviously Hassan Azad, because obviously he was batting really well. But James Vince, who's been absolutely hammered by people on Twitter for the last 2 days, because he came out and said, like, well, he isn't that sort of lad. He probably just didn't realise at the time that he'd done it. And then when he has done it, it's been too late for us to call it back.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I don't know, people are like saying, oh, he should come out and slate his teammate. He's not going to come out as captain and slate someone, even if he thinks he has deliberately cheated, is he?
No, it's one of them. It's a classic, like, you back your teammates up 100%, don't you?
You know,
if it's against you, it's a terrible decision he's made, obviously, but you know, you back your teammates to the hilt, don't you, even though whether he's wrong or he's right, you know.
Looking less controversial than the county champ, I quite enjoyed seeing Billy Root get to his turn by knocking a two off his brother, the England captain. I think it's got to be a nice way to get to your turn. And followed up literally the day after, wasn't it, that Sam Curran absolutely dispatched Tom Curran to all parts as well in the IPL, so a bit of brotherly love going on. But Somerset were the ones that impressed me probably the most. I know Hampshire obviously hammered Leicestershire and probably didn't need that stumping. And obviously Gloucestershire did well, but Somerset were they something like 80-odd for like 5 or 6 at one point, and they've gone on to win the game. That took some doing, that, as to be fair to them.
Don't know whether it was that bad, but it was pretty good.
Right then, one last thing I'm going to talk about in the world of cricket, to be fair today, is the 100. I'm going to keep it brief because I know we could talk about it all day and probably argue the fours and against for it and all that. But they've announced today that instead of calling it a wicket when you get out, it's going to be go down as an out. Now, I understand the logic, because the wicket refers to the pitch that we play on. It refers to the wicket keeper behind the stumps. It refers to the wickets as in the stumps, and it refers to the wickets as in the out. So I can understand that they might think it's complicated, shall we say, for a kid to understand, because you've got four things involving wickets that are completely different. But at the same time, I would say it's maybe a bit unnecessary, because all you're going to do in reality is probably upset a load of people. Although, are you just upsetting people who were never going to like it anyway because it's not counties?
I've not seen that. Has that come out today, has it?
Yeah, they're expecting to change it from wickets to outs.
We've gone all baseball, haven't we, basically?
Yeah, we've gone baseball on it.
It's shit. Let's just get out there. It's shit. Yeah. So what we're going to do, right, we're going to create this new game format to try and appeal to the younger generation to get them into cricket. And then what we're going to do is we're going to change all of the names so they relate to a totally different sport.
Ultimately, it's cricket, isn't it?
It's an absolute brainwave, isn't it? We're going to get people into cricket by teaching them things that are nothing to do with cricket.
That doesn't make any sense to me, that.
No. I'm all for the 100. I think the idea of 8 city-based teams is a great idea. I know county fans won't like it, but let's be honest, if you don't live in a first-class county, why would you support any of them? Not many people do. In fact, most people I ask just say, I'll go to whichever one's on that suits me round here, to be fair. So I don't mind that. I don't mind the 100-ball thing so that it's done in time and so that it fits into TV. But the two things that annoy me are the changing of the overs to 5 balls, well, 5 or 10 balls, because that's just going to confuse the life out of kids, surely, when it comes to the actually turn up to play like under-8s cricket or under-10s cricket. Surely that's going to be confusing. And as you say, this to me just, I understand the logic, but I just don't think there's any need for it because I don't think it's a big problem. I don't think that's the difference between a kid playing cricket and a kid not playing cricket.
I think ultimately, I'm all for new ideas and new things, but I just think that there can be too much all at once at the same time. Like, we've still got to keep it as cricket, haven't we? And you know, changing a wicket to being out and out, just is like, why does that need to be changed? It just doesn't need to be changed, does it? You know, like you say, it overcomplicates things, and I just think being a 100-ball game is complicated enough, and you know, and to get your head around that first of all, and then it's everything else that goes with it. But I'm all for the change of the game. That's, you know, if it's going to get more people in and all that kind of stuff, but let's not overcomplicate it at the same time.
Yeah, I think they're so desperate to make it less complicated. They've actually made in their heads they've made cricket a lot more complicated than it actually is. I understand that if you were thinking about it in your head, you might think, that's quite confusing. 4 things have the same name to it and they're completely different. But actually, I don't think I've ever had an issue when teaching a kid, them not understanding that that's a wicket when they're out, but that's also the wickets over there that you're bowling at. Like, they don't think kids struggle with that. I don't think kids would struggle with the overs being 6 balls. Like, I don't think that's the problem. I don't think the issue is that cricket is overcomplicated. I think the issue is that cricket isn't visible enough to a lot of kids, and cricketers aren't considered heroes to a lot of kids because they haven't had, like, say, the 05 Ashes like me and Jono had. I think that's the issue, and that's why I like the idea of being on TV, having bright coloured kits, having Geoff Rocher bowling at Johnny Bairstow, Brill. Like, I think that's really good, but I just don't. I think they're like overthinking it because they're so desperate to make it a success. That they're like overthinking things out for me, but I think at some point we'll no doubt have to have a whole episode dedicated to the 100 because I think it's like the world's biggest talking point, anything cricket, which will be interesting, shall we say, no matter what happens. Right, have we got any other news, but guys, from world cricket that you can think of other than Mohammad Rizwan's just being absolutely class for Pakistan?
I saw something earlier, just a little Twitter clip of someone bowling in the IPL. Was it today?
Oh, yes.
The best action you've ever seen in your life?
Is it like a sidearm sort of slingshot kind of thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, someone asked a really good question, I thought, on Twitter, which was, when does an overarm ball become an underarm ball? Like, underarm's not allowed. He is literally perpendicular, so at what point is it allowed? Because we watched that T10, didn't we, Jono? And there was an interesting action in that one, to say the least. I mean, he was just slinging his sidearm. And I'd say
the T10, the best league in world cricket.
You love that league, you do.
I've seen more village things in that with people making millions and millions of pounds than I have in Division 3 of the North Staffordshire South Cheshire League before. a man with no top on playing professional cricket for a start.
Great stuff, mate.
Was a highlight.
Yeah, I think it was Chetan Sakaria wanted today for Rajasthan, He's got, to be fair, he's got figures of 3 for 31 from four over, so it worked for him. 13 dot balls, but I'm not sure that it can be classed as an overarm bowl when your arm is literally perfectly.
Every ball like that?
No, weirdly he didn't. So some were quite straight arm, especially when he was bowling over the wicket. But then some balls he'd come really wide of the crease, and like when he was coming round, he liked to do it as well. So he was getting a fair angle on it from round the wicket. It was interesting. I wouldn't like face it on a Saturday. No. But then I don't like facing much bowling on a Saturday, to be fair. Right, I think we'll leave Wheel Cricket behind and we'll go on to John. Having a little chat with John about all things Port Hill to begin with, and then we'll get on to the preview of the Prem that I'm sure the whole of the North staff is desperate to listen to, mainly for our predictions where we get it all wrong and they can slag us off all year when we get
on the bright side, mate. We've had we've had professional cricketers, we've had professional journalists, we've had bat makers, cricket company owners.
We've got
journalists filmers, on next week,
yeah,
filmers,
commentators.
But we've never had a North Staffs South Cheshire Premier Division winning captain. So there you go. That's what our listeners in Nepal want to hear. The one listener in Cambodia.
Yeah, I don't know why he listened, but fair play to the guy. Right then, so I guess we may as well start with that, John, and talk about, obviously, you've won the Prem the last couple of years, won it obviously in a normal season, and then last year, I think we can call it far from normal.
Yeah.
What's it been like these last couple of years since you took over as captain?
Well, I'm going into now my fourth year. In the last three, we've managed to win the Premier League, which is obviously very nice for me to say, and I'm very proud of that, obviously. But I did take over, I must admit, a very well-established sort of group of lads that my brother obviously started off and got the ball rolling in terms of winning trophies and getting the mentality right of the lads. So I was very lucky, first of all, to take on such a good team. In the last 3 years have just been, just what you want. But, you know, it doesn't just happen. Like, it does take a lot of hard work and a lot of planning. But I can't complain really with 3-3, and we managed to win it all but cup along the way as well. Fairly successful so far. But obviously we've done some planning and hoping to go again this time round.
So what would you say was key in those first 2 years when it was a normal season? Because I know there were some proper tight finishes. I remember us talking about it in like the offices. You're going into the final weekend and you've got play meetings and basically it's winner takes all.
It's come down to meeks quite a few times, to be honest. It's funny how the fixtures work out really sometimes. It's come down to us two quite a bit. Like I say, we've obviously really happy with how things have gone, and there has been tense finishes, and it's always seemed to be us and Meeks. We've won it actually 4 out of the last 5 years, and with Meeks winning it with one in between. And it was quite refreshing, obviously, last year that there was a Longton and there was other teams that were challenging. So hopefully that's the case this time as well. We'll have to wait and see.
How different was last year then? Because obviously they changed the formats and things, didn't they? And it seemed to be a lot tighter sort of throughout the season. Especially as you say with Longton, I think did they end up winning? I think Gade was saying they won the most games, didn't they, in the league last year?
They definitely won one more than us, maybe even two. We love the format. We like, over the years, we've not been great at the Sunday cricket, the T20 stuff, and the one day sort of stuff, so to speak, because we quite like the longer format of the game, but. In terms of all that, I think as a group of lads, we've done everything that we could have really, and got to where we were. And we're trying to hopefully keep that sort of 8-9 lads together for the next 4 or 5 years. We don't want to fall off the wagon now. We want to keep going for the next 5-6 years and beyond. So yeah, in terms of last year, it was a completely new experience. Obviously, it was one of them, the last game of the season. Again, it went down to the last game of the season. And Longton actually lost to Meekins at Meekins. And we ended up winning. We beat Burslem at home. And we didn't think, because Longton only needed so many points to win it. Even if we'd won, it didn't really matter. So we won, and then we were waiting for their results, and it was quite funny actually, because it came through on Play Cricket that Dave Wheeling was the last wicket, got run out. And then we refreshed it again just to make sure, and they were still nine down and Wheels were still in. So it was quite complicated. We started cheering once, we actually celebrated once, and then we had to stop, and then eventually the last wicket went down and we celebrated again. I think it was one of them, if we finished second, we wouldn't have really been bothered. And it's like, oh, it doesn't really matter. It was only a short season. But because we'd won it, we're definitely going to count it 100%.
Tuck in.
Yeah, definitely.
Just for everyone who isn't sure then, John, because we have, unbelievably, got people who listen across the division. So just confirm to us what is the format for the upcoming Premier Division season? Because I know it's different than the format that we're playing.
Yeah, it's changed over the winter, really, a couple of times. It's going to start with 11 games. There's 22 games overall, 11 teams. It's going to be 11 games with a pink ball that's going to be 45 overs, win-lose, with power plays in that, nine overs per bowler. And then the second half is going to be red ball, whites, and 50-over games, but you can also draw in that game as well. So if we don't bowl the team out batting second, for example, there's either a winning draw or a losing draw involved. So I'm all for it. I quite like the traditional side of it as well, but I also like the new sort of win-lose format, because ultimately we're going to lose games. We sort of take to any format and just got to adapt ultimately. So yeah, that's how the season's going to roll, I think. It's going to be splitting basically just into two, pink ball and red ball. Win-lose first half, win-lose draw second half.
How different do you actually find the two formats? Like, do you actually feel like you have to really adapt as a team and think, like, approach the game differently? Like, would you actually change your batting lineup or anything? Or do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Saturday and Sunday cricket, this is how you'd approach it, really. But in terms of when you were playing Saturday league cricket to then cup cricket, you wouldn't really change much about it. But now it's like league cricket. I've actually got things in my head that I could pick this team, or the same team but with a different batting order, like you say, to go with the red ball and then change it with the pink ball or whatever way round it is. But ultimately, I don't think many things will change. It's all about, you know, getting more runs than the opposition and taking more wickets than the opposition ultimately, isn't it? So
One thing I've noticed, John, certainly over the last couple of years, if you kind of like put your feelers out across the country, we're probably, there's no detriment to our league in any stretch of the imagination, but we're probably one of the last, certainly Premier Leagues in the country, or certainly ECB leagues in the country, that have shifted to a split format. So I'll ask you the question, positive change or negative change?
Positive, definitely. Definitely, because, I mean, we've, and I thought about this actually today because I knew this might come up. The positive change, I want to mention the league actually and how positive the changes have been recently, in terms of the 2020 stuff now being changed to a Friday night. I think that's positive. I think the split format is positive, because at times on a Sunday in the 2020, it'd end up being a short game, but you'd be there at 9:30 in the morning, for example, and you wouldn't be ended up back at home till half nine, 10 o'clock at night, because you play the first game. If you end up winning the first game, you then played the last game, you know, and there's lads that are like, well, it's a Sunday, I've played yesterday. It's supposed to be a quick format. So I think that's one thing that's positively changed, and we've got these power plays now and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, whereas in the past you'd have the second team sort of hanging on for a draw, or the bowling side bowling second wanting to get a draw, so they'd have 10 men on the boundary, you know, and I just thought that isn't cricket for me. So I think now with the power play stuff, and, you know, they've got a 30-yard circle in both formats now, and you can only have so many inside the circle across pink ball and red ball, I just think it's a really positive change for the league, and to increase sort of participation across the board, really.
Just thinking about Port Hill a little bit more, just before we get on to talking about the Prem itself, and obviously we'll talk about your prep for the year. But obviously Port Hill isn't just successful on the pitch with the first team, and obviously I know the second team have also been really successful winning Div 2 last year in the shortened season. Obviously, really successful with juniors, nice ground, lots going on at the bar and stuff. How much does that sort of help you guys on the pitch, having people like Charlie, the Allisons, the Tattons, all of them? Like, how much does that help you without making them too happy that they gain a mention?
Yeah, no, those sort of people, and the list could go on, mates. The list could really go on. At the minute, I talk to Charlie obviously quite a lot, and at the minute we're riding the biggest crest of a wave that you could possibly imagine. I think everything at the minute is going as well as what it can, but we also know that it can also, you know, not go as well as that within a click of the fingers sort of thing. So there's some very, very good people who won't get a mention tonight or won't sort of be in the limelight, you know, as much as myself, so to speak, that put in so much hard work with the volunteers. And, you know, we've got a really good group of volunteers that get us through not just a Saturday, but from Monday to Sunday. There's something going on every single night. It is a special place to be at the minute. It's like a home outside your own home sort of thing. And we all pull together and I think that does help us on the pitch. We get that support, we get that backing. Sometimes you get back in the bar after and some of the lads don't even know what they're there for. You know, they've had that many drinks. It's like, have you got on, John? I said, oh, yeah, we've done all right today. You know, it's one of those really, because they've had that much to drink sort of thing. So, yeah, as much as it is a very good social aspect to the club, we've really focused on the cricket over the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You know, we've got that right. I think the social aspect will always be okay. But with the cricket being really successful at the minute, we've gone to that next level, and hopefully we can stay there for as long as possible.
Before I let Jono go with his quickfire round, I've got two questions from a lad called Jim Amis, who isn't from the area. So I think these are sort of generic questions to anyone who's ever won a league in cricket. But yeah. His first question was, after winning the league, did you go out and celebrate in your whites?
This last season?
Well, any season, I would say, from his question.
I've stayed in my whites each time we've won the league. We didn't go out down the town in the whites. We just stayed down the club. And each year I've had to buy a new kit because I've got to my cricket bag the next year. Because you never check it, do you?
Never.
You look at it the next year and I've lost my hat, I've lost my helmet, I've lost my pads. My gloves have got beer all over it. You know, there's things just all over the place. So, yeah, I have stayed in my whites, but I wouldn't say I've been down the town. And no, we've stayed up the club in the whites, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
good. I was going to say, I've heard some stories on other podcasts and things about people dancing on tables in like Yates's in the whites.
Yeah. No.
And no, I think that's, as much as I'd love to see it, I'd be embarrassed if it was me. And then his second question was, how many times have you mentioned the achievement to your co-workers only to be met with complete apathy? Well, which, to be fair, you're lucky, aren't we?
You can answer that.
Yeah, you get. See, John works for ASM Sports, really good local sports coaching company. Send your kids to all of the holiday clubs to keep John busy, to keep Smithy busy, to keep Alex and John happy. But they're all sporty people, so they're all very into it, aren't they? We love nothing more than.
As you know, Ash, we've got cricketers, we've got footballers, we've got, you know, everything across the board, really. And well, not we haven't got a lot of cricketers at all. It's only me, and now you've left, and I sort of have to hold the fort for cricket. Really, everyone else thinks it's really boring, which I can't argue with sometimes. But yeah, they've got a keen interest. To be honest, they don't really understand what's going on, but they know we're doing pretty well. So
yeah, get away with that one.
Yeah,
just to keep John the boss happy for you and for me, even though I don't work there anymore. He keeps asking me for a shout out for the new company Sport Seller that sells loads of sports kit, and they're selling nets, roll on covers, sight screens, all sorts. So he promises me he will send us a discount code for local clubs, but I'm still waiting on it. So for in the meantime, just go and have a little look at their Instagram and keep John happy for us, because it might mean John gets a pay rise at some point when he looked up.
We'll see about that, mate.
He's going to listen to this for any luck, and I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Right, Jono.
Yes.
I'll let you explain the quickfire round to John.
You're letting me explain. It's your baby, this, mate. I'm just honoured that
you came up with the idea.
I came up with the idea. And let you, like, like with all great things, mate, I came up with the idea and the implementation, I just gave up to someone more able than myself. That's kind of how my life rolls. Right, so quick fire round for those who aren't sure. I'm going to ask John a series of questions. He's going to get through as many as he possibly can. Wherever possible, has to avoid naming his own club if he can. So, for example, if I say favourite such and such, he's got to avoid taking the easy answer and saying Port Hill. But we'll just take it as an absolute given that Port Hill is his favourite whenever we can. But we promise there's no stitch-ups whatsoever. How long have we got, Turner? You're on time.
He's been a whole minute.
Being that Lalo is, yeah, I mean, it's one thing that he does do well is to tell the time. So disappointed that, yeah, unbelievably. So he's not here tonight. So you're keeping time, Turner. Yeah. I'm on question duty.
Are you ready for the countdown?
I am ready for the countdown.
Right then. 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, John, highest score?
126.
Favourite club ground?
Checkley.
Best tees? Reminder on the quick fire part of the quick fire round.
Hemi.
Red ball or pink ball?
Red.
Colours or white?
White.
Best club player played with?
Ben Cotton.
Best club player played against?
We're making 90 seconds, John.
Fucking hell, fire. Fuck me, that's a tough one.
Best club innings you've ever seen?
Fucking hell, my mind has gone absolutely blank. Best club innings I've ever seen.
We'll come back. Best friend in cricket.
My brother.
Favourite tea item.
Oatcakes.
After the game, drink of choice.
Pint of lager.
Pre-match song.
Pre-match. Anything Kasabian related.
Post-match song.
Kenny Rogers, the Gambler.
Right, that was one minute. 45,
oh,
I think we're gonna have to come back.
I stumbled so much then, didn't I?
We'll take it. It's a good job. I only had one more question left. Right, okay. So what do we get stuck on? Best club player played with, best club player played against, and then we're gonna go for best club cricketer innings you've ever seen and best club cricketer bowling you've ever seen. So basically let's eliminate overseas pros.
So the best I mentioned about Cotty, didn't I? Best to play.
You've mentioned Cotty, yeah.
Best I played with. Best I played against.
God.
And we're not saying overseas, no?
We're going to ignore paid professionals.
Oh, fuck me. I'm really stumbling here. Oh, no. I can't think. My mind has gone so blank. I'll go Rich Harvey.
Oh, that's a good choice. Still shuffling around for stone seconds, isn't he, somewhere?
Unbelievable bloke. I mean, he thinking back now to when I'm talking to these young lads about coming up through the system and giving them opportunities and stuff, I played with Arv at Little Stoke. It wasn't for very long, really, but he had such an impact, along with Rob Aidan, Phil Walker, Rich Adams, those Gaz Morris, people like that, and just give me the... Not necessarily the technical ability. It was more like the mental side of the game. And it was I hold half quite high esteem really across the game. So he did a lot for me. I'm a brother.
I'm going to be very kind about Rich Harvey. Rich Harvey probably doesn't know who I am anyway, both in cricketing and professional terms. But he is actually a deputy head vice principal within the same school trust that I'm in. So of course. Rich Harvey, I'm a massive fan of you out there, mate, anyway. And if he does ever listen to this podcast, he can know
that. He's going to give me a ring and say, what the fuck have you mentioned me for? I said, I couldn't think of anybody else, I'll be honest. Yeah.
What the fuck have you mentioned me for? And who's this guy on the podcast who knows who I am? Right then, so here's the other two then. I love stories like this, because if you ever talk in cricket about this, you always get onto this kind of thing after a few pints. Best club cricketer innings you've ever seen? Again, we're going to exclude overseas now, or paid professionals.
Now you've said it, I've something's pinged in my head. We once played Wood Lane, and I think we batted first. I think Wood Lane were chasing, and we did okay. And Jamie Jarvis was batting against Fahad Massoud, who was our professional at the time. I can't remember who's at the other end, but yeah, he basically just hit the ball wherever he wanted. He was very aggressive, and by all accounts, it was towards the end of his career, and he did actually play at Portail. And a lot of lads say how talented and how gifted he was really with the bat, and I never really saw it that much. But I think he only got 80. Well, not only, but he was 80 odd. But I just thought with the conditions we were playing in and the sort of intensity of the game, it was up there with one of the best. And for me to say, it's obviously stuck in my head a little bit. So there's probably a lot more, but you know, I've not had a lot of time to think about it, but that one sticks out for me.
And we'll finish with best club bowling that you've ever seen. Can be someone you've played with, can be a teammate.
I've not actually took to the pitch with him yet, but Matt Coxon, who we've signed this time, has many a time got seventhers, eighthers against us when he was in the Stone team that were winning everything years ago. And at Portail, he's particularly good, and he keeps reminding me of that, how good he is at Portail. So, yeah, I think Coco probably, if you're getting an amateur who can sort of roll through a team, and once he gets on a roll, you can't really stop him. I don't think there's many better than him, really. I know he's playing for us now, but I'd probably say him if he was playing somewhere else as well, to be honest. But yeah, he's up there. He got an 8 for once at Port Hill, which blew us away. So yeah, I'd have to say Cocker.
That's not a bad choice, I don't think. Hemi tea is one that I don't know about you two, and I've never sampled a Hemi tea, I don't think.
I've been a few Hemi parties, weirdly. Parties in there, and the food's always been decent, but I don't know if that's them who's done the food or not, so... Is there something that stands out about a Hemeef tea?
No, not really.
Or was it that just a bit of a panic choice? Because yeah. I mean, listeners won't see the panic on your face, but there was definitely panic starting on your face three
under
questions
pressure.
In then.
You know, I should be a bit more cool and calm under pressure, but I wasn't then. And I still probably need a bit more time. I don't know why I thought of Hemeef, but I just remember having a nice tea there once. There's nothing more to it than that, really.
Oatcakes are a good choice on the favourite tea item, though. But yeah. I will say this one, at Bingle End, we always do this thing of buttering the oatcake. I don't know whether you've ever seen that one before, buttering an oatcake. But...
with just butter?
No, the cheese goes on after, but you butter it, cook it through, then put your cheese on and re-grill it again. So it's kind of like twice grilled oatcake, but you butter it first and then grill that. It's absolutely disgustingly not good for you, but it's incredible.
Very nice.
It is incredible, yeah. It's a good set that was. I enjoyed that.
No, it's good that quick fire stuff, but genuinely, like, I'll probably come off this call now and think of other things, you know, that I could have put forward. That's the whole point of it, I suppose, isn't it? So,
it's all right.
Yeah. Good fun.
We should have a...
He lied to us, didn't he, mate? He admitted that he was just lying and was just saying random things that came into his head at one point because he didn't know... He didn't know what
I was thinking about it, wasn't I?
What we really need is one of my favourites that I'm going to squeeze in somewhere. It can't go in a quickfire round because some of these stories take explaining. But there's going to be like a favourite club cricket moment. Like, I don't even know whether you know this story, John. But this is an absolute stormer that I've been keeping waiting in the wings. He got a mention a couple of weeks ago, but Mohammed Azharullah got a mention a couple of weeks ago on the pod. Mm-hmm. And I think he was hilarious. I don't know what your, obviously he did very well for you, so I'm sure you've only got good things to say, but having played against him, I think it was just the once actually, unless we played each other in the 2020 as well, I think it was just the once, but I thought he was funny, right, from an outside perspective. And what everyone missed on that day, that only a very, very few select Bignall End lads know, because he was the first Portail player I think to turn up that day in his very nice white BMW, is that Mohammed Azharullah actually, when Portail played Bingle End in the Talbot Cup, actually reversed his car into the like the fencing on our car, the metal fencing on our car park, not once, not twice, but three times.
Didn't know that.
So to set the scene, this is why you can't do it in a quickfire round and why I find it completely hilarious, is we'd had an under-18s game on in the morning. I'd been cooking the breakfasts. We'd had something on the Saturday night, so half the lads, including myself, were half-cooked from the night before. So it was a bit of a stagger to the ground anyway, whenever you could. But we weren't going to be there exceptionally early because the under-18s were playing anyway. Azarullah was the first lad, Port Hill lad, to turn up. I think the under-18s were just finishing, and the car park was kind of clearing, and I think a few of our lads were just starting to stir, or they were starting to get their kit bags out of the car because the juniors were coming out of the change room, etc., etc. And he really struggles because his white BMW, bless him, was quite low to the ground, and I think he was struggling to see kind of the metal railings that section off the outfield from the car park. So he's got his door open and he's hanging out of the door and he can't see the post, and he just reverses his car straight into the post, right? And it gives it a bit of a thwack. So he puts it forward, and bear in mind, he's hanging out of the car at this point in time. He's the only Porter lad there. He's hanging out of the car, can't see. So he shouts a couple of our lads over. It's like, back us in. And if anyone knows Bignall End, especially so for a Sunday in a cup game, parking your car on metal railings is not a very good place to be because it's right on cow corner. It's a prime being hit kind of slot because it's only about 5 yards from the boundary. And we were like, yeah, mate, bring it back. Stop there. And we're literally shouting, stop there, mate.
Carried on.
Whack, straight in again. Right. So this is twice now that he's trotted his nice white BMW against the metal railings. Forward again, it was like, oh, no, yeah, just back us in. Doesn't seem to care. It's like, back us in. He was like, no, mate, stop. Like, having to wave him down behind his car, smack, back in there three times. So much so, believe it or not, and you'd have probably missed this if you'd have turned up after him, his car, he just left it resting against the metal railing on the car park. So if you'd have seen his car on that day, it was literally pressed up against with, like, an indent up against his car, of where he's just smacked it into the railings, and he just ended up leaving it there. And I think he just threw his hands up in the air and just went, oh yeah, fuck it.
Why not?
And he just got out.
No, I didn't know that. It's the first time I heard that story.
Brilliant. Totally overshadowed by the day. But yeah. I think the fact that most of us were half cut and there was only a couple of us there, kind of that gets kind of overshadowed. But it's one of the funniest things that no one knows about that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. No, definitely the first time. Oh, Azza would never bring it up, really.
I think that was his proper. I don't think he'd ever felt. He probably never felt as village as that before in his life.
Yeah, I mean, I knew this would come up, this sort of game, but you know, obviously, Bignall End deserved and were well worthy winners. But in terms of like how successful we've been, like we do actually talk about that game quite a lot. Well, actually, it lives in my head quite a lot, I'll be honest with you. So like we actually use it as a reference point to from where we were then. I mean, we were quite successful then, to be honest. But it's like sometimes you need that knockback to like not in just in sport but in life or in anything. You need that knockback sometimes to then drive you and sort of enjoy the good times again. So as much as it was an awful experience, like it's something that we'll always look back on.
Won't go that far, mate. It was one of my happiest days in cricket. Well, we describe it as an awful moment. Let's not take away from it too much.
For me and the rest of the lads, it was awful, Johnny. Let me explain that. It was awful. So after that, though, we've used it as a sort of bounce board to go again, sort of thing. So, you know, yeah, it wasn't a great day, that, but...
If I give you something that's like strangely positive out of this day, this is Aid as well, who's probably now 12 bottles deep at this point. Also wanted to remind you that you hit the only boundary of your innings, the second ball of the game, I think it was, that day. Mm. I think that was it. Off him, I might add. So he's kind of shopping himself in. But yeah, that was the...
I remember getting out to him. Bring
it up. Yeah. He still mentions it every week now.
Yeah, it does.
It was a very good short and wide ball, which which I managed to cut to point. And the lads will tell you, I get out like that quite regularly, to be honest. So, yeah, set the trap.
Bad balls get good players, mate. I say it quite regularly. Bad balls get good players.
Good catch, actually. Well, Sammy Zarouf obviously used to play at Port Hill. He did a bit of a job on us that day as well. He caught me out at point. He then managed to get three for four.
three and four for not many.
And bowled really well. Yeah, we just couldn't. Didn't have an answer for him really. So yeah,
he's now about 6'2", and
is he still playing?
Got a bigger beard than me and you. Bless him. Yeah,
is he still playing?
What to go? He'll be there Saturday. Trundling in against Little Stoke, bless him.
Batting very good.
Top order. He's got Sammy has been, I don't know what these winters look like, but got signed onto the Warwickshire Elite Performance Programme last year.
Oh, really?
Probably not surprised by a member of the Giroux family, are we? Because we are intensely talented lads.
Yeah, they're very talented boys, yeah. Very talented.
As you see, I'm glad we bought that story. I was just bringing that story that day up, really, for take the piss out of Mohamed Azharullah for one of the best club cricket stories I've ever seen. But now we're mentioning it, Turner. Do you want a full breakdown of the day?
Let's not do that, eh? We haven't got all week. Oh, wow. Well, you can tell us minute by minute.
I'll just tell you the best bit where it was an absolute bit. John will back me up. It was an absolutely baking hot day. It was an absolutely weather-wise, a gorgeous day. And when he won the toss and just smirked at me and started chuckling and went, "We'll have a bat." And I just went, "Yeah, thought so." That was when I thought the day was going to head downhill. But it was for many reasons. At least I'm glad that you guys have found a positive out of it.
Yeah, I mean, Jono, it's like, it's sport, isn't it? Like, it happens. Like, it's not, at the time, it was unexpected. Obviously, we weren't expecting to go there and lose, but it was a mindset thing for us that we had to change from ultimately, because, you know, we should have won that game, yes, but we didn't. You know, you deserve to win. It was simple as that, really. So
I remember talking to Justin Moles a couple of years ago when Bagnell was started coming through the leagues. I think that was either his first or his second year there, and we were talking. They turned up and we looked like we were getting on top at one point in time. And I will just stress that it was a very short period of time that we looked like we were getting on top, and then we ended up folding and losing quite comfortably in the end. And I remember speaking to him afterwards, and he was talking about they got absolutely larruped by, I think it was Norton and Ailes, either the first or second week of the season. And bear in mind, everyone, certainly in our division that year, was going, "Bloody hell, Bagnell Norton, they're not going to lose a game that year. They're not going to lose a game. They're going to beat everyone, and they're going to beat everyone quite comfortably." And they got absolutely hammered by Norton and Ailes. And he said they spoke about it every week for the next 2 years, basically. Mm. Like, let's just remember Norton and Ailes. Let's remember Norton and Ailes and never let it have it again. You hear about professional footballers and certainly successful sports teams use motivation. I mean, I watch a lot of American sport, and the amount of American sports teams that come back having lost a significant game in the previous year, 2 years, that come back and use that as their motivation moving forward. It happens a lot more often than you think.
Yeah, and in sport, you know, it's 11 against 11, ultimately. It doesn't matter who the 11s are. You're playing against 11 blokes who want to beat you. It's as simple as that, isn't it? So if you're not matching them in terms of competitiveness or attitude, you're never going to, you're not starting off on the best part anyway. So, yeah, you know, we've hopefully moved past that now, and we do use it as a springboard, and we probably talk about it a bit too much really with some of the lads, but you know, it definitely drives me on to be sort of more successful and keep going, and like I say, it's a mindset thing rather than a talent or ability thing. So that's really important for me, that we go into every game and try and win.
Right, and I think it's time we did the dreaded bit and we preview the Prem boys. So we're going to start off. I'm going to do it in order of where the teams finished last year, just to keep it hopefully quite simple, in the fact that we'll start off with Port Hill. Now, I'll be honest, I don't think there's much point me and Jono talking about Port Hill. So I think it's best to hand over to John, who can just sort of...
Oh, no, I'd like to throw one out there. As a local cricket badger like you, Turner, we've been talking transfers and talking teams. So, John, you're on the inside of this, so your tongue is probably tied. But I'm going to say a statement, and you can either disagree or agree as much as you want. So, Matt Coxon, signing of the winter. Off you go.
Is that what you think?
Well, it might not be what I think. It's what someone might think.
It's definitely what I think, yes. It was... It came from both sides, I'll be honest. We did get in touch with him, but it was not as if his time was up at Stone, but he wanted a change, and we wanted an English amateur with everything like we talked about previously about the overseas route and taking a little bit of a risk, which we have done in the past. But we obviously, with the COVID situation, we weren't willing to go down that route. So I got wind that he was wanting a little bit of a change and a little bit of a freshen up, and got in touch with him. And yeah, we basically got it sorted in October, November time, and that was us done. So we've been waiting from then till April, really, to start, because we've done no indoor stuff like anybody else. And yeah, you never know till you get on the pitch, but I do believe we've probably got, you know, one of the best all round cricketers, you know, the Premier League over the last 10 to 12 years, 100%.
Any other ins and outs at all, or is it literally just Matt?
No, just Coco in terms of coming in. The rest of the lads are obviously staying on board. And just going back to Coco, like, it isn't very often you get a bowler and a batter, you know, for the price of one, basically. You know, you're getting some. We do tend to go down the bowler route, because that's what's been made us so successful. But we have, at times last year, we figured out that we're not too great at chasing a score down. So we also wanted to get somebody that could sort of bat in the middle and take us home, really, and be 40, 50, 60 not out, and win us the game with bat or ball. And I think ultimately going down the English UK qualified route, I don't think we could have done any better. You know, we won't know until the first game comes around, but I'm hoping that he will be the signing of the winter, so to speak, Jono. So yeah, fingers crossed.
What about the young lads then, Jono? So I'm going to throw a couple of names, and this is no detriment to any of the other names at Port Hill, but I'm just thinking of some of the lads that have certainly like impressed me the last couple of years playing against the twos in Division Two. So what kind of part are some of the younger lads? So I think Harry Bailey, Rowan Hesketh. What kind of role do you think, or do you see them kind of playing?
So we're looking, the younger sort of group, you know, Lewis Ellison is still a young lad. Last year, really, over the last couple of years, he's really shone and he's now an established Premier League player. He could go above and beyond the Premier League quite easily. So we've got Lewis, we've got Harry, who broke through, so to speak, last year with his off spin. And Rowan, as you touched on, we've got a lad called Tom Longworth as well, who's played in the twos. We're trying to mix him in a little bit more with the ones this time. But Tom and Rowan are at private school, so that we won't be seeing them for the first five, six, seven games. But yeah, it is something we're conscious of. But also, we're not an ageing team, so we're trying to feed in these younger lads. But ultimately, you know, we've got, like I say, an 8 or 9 that isn't going to budge. So it's breaking into that team but also making it a team that people can break through to. It's not a closed shop, so we've got to keep one or two spots available for a good second team performer or a good young lad, and keep the door open, really, rather than it just being a closed shop. And that works, hopefully that's the model throughout the club. If you are performing for the team below you, there is chances available. So yeah, going with the younger lads, I've probably missed somebody. But yeah, Harry's come on leaps and bounds, and he's going to be our main sort of spinner next year. And he can also bat. Like Craig Barker bats at 11 for us at the minute. You know, we've got a hell of a lot of depth in batting.
Not a bad number 11.
No, probably one of the better number 11s going around, to be honest. And if he was arsed, he'd probably bat a lot higher. But he just sometimes doesn't even bring his kit, you know. So he's, he just bowls his 8-9 overs, and he's quite happy with that.
Right, moving on to the team who finished second and just missed out last year. And as we said earlier, that was Longton. Now, I had a little chat with a couple of people at Longton. They brought in Rich Williams from Checkley, an off-spinner. He's played made a few appearances for Staffs. And they've brought in Saeed Saad Ali, a left-handed bat and medium pace bowler from Pakistan. Played a couple of ODIs against Australia 2 years ago. Averages over 45 with a bat in first class on this day. And should be available from the beginning of the season. They also signed Clates from Wedgwood, so good luck to Clates. and they've lost Freddie Dubois. What do we make of Longton? Because they were a bit of a surprise package last year, I would have said, John.
Yeah, I mean, Jones is a good mate of mine. And he seems to do, he's very passionate about the club and does things the right way, so to speak. And he's sort of fixing, putting little pieces of jigsaw into a big puzzle at the minute, you know, and I think they're getting somewhere with it. I wouldn't say they didn't surprise me whatsoever last year, I'll be honest, because I think that format suited them, especially because they have quite a long batting lineup and they've got five or six bowlers, which is important, obviously, in that format. So I think they really thrived on the format of the game first and foremost, and then obviously they were unlucky towards the end. But I think they'll be up there this year, I would have thought.
Might average 45 in one day cricket, mate, but he's never been at Bagnall on a damp one. I'll tell you that.
Against Bill Albatti.
Against Bill, yeah.
That'll be the true test.
Yeah. Next up, we of course have Meekins, the old foes for you. They signed Paul Byrne, aren't they, the spinner. I don't really know if they've signed, recognise anyone else that they've signed as such.
No, I don't think they've. I'm not sure if there was talk about an overseas or another player, but not that I know of. They've not signed anybody else, but obviously Paul Byrne's played a lot of games for Staffs and is a very experienced player, a good player. And again, they'll be challenging, no doubt. We always have very, very close games. It's very low scoring for the main part, but it's always very, very close. It goes obviously one way or the other. It's always competitive, always playing in good spirits. But again, there'll be no surprise with them or me saying that they'll be up there next year, 100%.
Good for the league, John. Someone like Paul Byrne coming in from south of the county.
I think so. I think he'll add to their, obviously, maybe a missing piece of their bowling attack with, obviously, Adnan not coming over. So, I think so. He's a quality player, so he's going to... It's going to improve their team and he'll improve the standards of the cricket in the area. So, yeah, good luck to him, other than against us.
And who would you say the key man with bat and key man with the ball for Meekins as you look at them and based on when you've played against them?
Answers anything other than Pete Wilshaw.
Oh, sure.
not accepted. Must be your answer.
I'm not going to go with Pete.
He's going to be gutted because he does listen.
I'm going to go Mike Yeale is the one that always seems to be either not out or there's always one that we can't really get out and he scores quite quickly. Pete's he's a very good player and he's shown that over a long, long time. But against us up to yet, it's been Mikey that's been the real stubborn one and the one that we can't really figure out at the minute and really, really good player with the bat. With the ball, I mean, again, looking at bowling attacks, theirs is probably up there with ours, if I'm honest. And that's probably why they've got to where they've got to and been so successful for a long period of time. So they've got Matt Reddick and Dan Cummins, Carl Eye, Paul Byrne, they've added to that as well. So I think the two I most have trouble with is Carl at the top, because when Carl gets it right, he's pretty handy. And Redders always seems to hit me in the dick. Every single game, my box splits. He squares me up and gets me in the dick and I have to change my box. But Redders is top bloke, top bowler. But if I was to say a batter and bowler, I'd go Hilly and I'd probably go Carl as a bowler.
That's names for people to keep an eye on then. Next up in fourth place last year was Leek, obviously the South Moorlands team. Now, again, another one who've sent us a little bit of info to go through. So, obviously, they were really happy last year to bring Alex Mallam and Thompson back, as well as Craig Malrose. They'll be still in the team, but obviously, I think Alex Thompson is signed for Durham. So, I don't know if he'll be actually available that much. They've signed Khalid Sawas from Mac. I can't pretend I know much about him, but from what I can gather, he's obviously done quite a good job over in the Cheshire Leagues. And they've also brought back Lodolf Potgieter, who helped him in 2012 when they last won the league as well. So,
great name. Great name.
Yeah, he's got a good name. But again, I would imagine a team that are going to be quite strong, probably maybe not quite on the level of the top three, but I think they'll be very close, especially if Thompson plays. I think he'll be key.
Yeah, going back to that question that Jono asked earlier about best amateur innings, so to speak, played four league against us at Port Hill, and he managed to get 100, and it was quite a hot, flattish kind of wicket. But obviously we always kind of pride ourselves on a bowling attack, so if someone bats well, you sort of put your hand up and say, well done, Tommy, I've got 100, you know, absolutely seamlessly, really. So that would probably be on par with Jamie's knock that I talked about earlier. But how much they get in will depend probably on not how successful they are, but how far they end up in the league, or how high they end up in the league. Leek are a good club, good cricket club. And trying to do things, again, the right way that we touched on before. So Alex is obviously the skipper, and he's driving that through. And, you know, with lads there that have got ex-first class sort of knowledge and all that kind of stuff, I'm expecting them to be in and around it.
Just giving a shout-out to Leek as well. They have asked me to mention they're going to have a game on August 8th where it's going to be Leek current players versus ex-players. And they're expecting Greg Willer, Andy Carr, and hopefully Ryan Sidebottom to play in the Legends side. So might be worth a little day out that if anyone fancies it. And obviously, if you're someone who used to play for Leek and you think you're a bit of a legend, which got me a bit cocky, but, you know, they're after ex-players, so they just want
to... I'm just throwing it out there, mate. Of course, right, if you think you're a legend and they've not asked you to play yet, you're not a legend. So don't bother. You might get in the current Leek 11, but you're not a legend yet. So don't bother getting in touch with...
Just looking for someone, I think, carry the water bottles at number 11. I think what they're after, mate.
Potentially.
Right, next up is Stone. Now, obviously, Stone were the team who've, I guess... Lost out thanks to John's good business. Obviously, Matt Coxon's left him, but they've had Sam Graham take over as captain, and they've added George Arden, the ex-Durham spinner. So, interested to see if they go for the crew tactic of having a dust bowl every week. Mm. But what do we make of Stone?
Yeah, you probably hit the nail on the head there, really. I can't think off the top of my head any sort of established seamers. I know they've got a few young lads that are probably up and coming, but you know, Sam's a good lad. He's a good captain, very good batter. Got John Cheadle as well, who's a top batter. They've also lost George Horbrook, who was quite dangerous for them at the top of the order as well. So a lot probably pins on Sam and John, and then obviously and George Harding as well. I don't really know too much about George, if I'm honest, but. With the bat, he's probably going to have to get a few runs alongside a few of the younger lads that will probably try and put their hand up and come through. So, yeah, like I say, it's unpredictable at the minute, isn't it? But those sort of names that I've mentioned are probably going to have to step up and do the business.
Could be a bit of a transition from them,
yeah.
I think, as an outsider from outside the league looking in. I mean, George Harding's a great lad, really, really nice lad. We played against him a few times in the last few years, firstly for crew and then... for Barlaston, where he was sub-proing for the best part, well, across two seasons, really. Lovely lad. Good player. Good player. Be interested to see how he goes in the Premier Division, to be honest, because he's got a taste of first-class cricket, hasn't he? But because he really did dominate, and I mean dominate Division 3, Division 2, especially when he was playing for crew, and then obviously he's been off playing first-class cricket. So be interesting to see how he comes back, especially in the Prem. Be interested. Definitely with his bowling more than his batting. That's not to say that I don't think he can bat, but I think definitely think he's more of a threat with a ball in his hand than with a bat in his hand.
Yeah.
The team that finished sixth last year was Checkley. Now, I think Checkley looked quite strong to me when you look at the fact that they've got Simon Guy, who's a keeper batsman from Yorkshire. They've got Ketterborough, who's a really good batsman from, is it Berkshire, I think it was. And then they've got Scott Alstone, so it looks just on paper batting wise like a very strong, experienced batting lineup.
No, as you keep saying these names, Ash, you remember you just mentioned Scott Alstone, and then thinking of an innings he played. I just keep recalling these brilliant, and he's one of the best we've come up against, definitely Scott. And they've added to what they've got already, and they down the years have sort of got the win-lose format down to a little bit of a tee with Coops and Hunty and all these kind of guys. Just and Rich Williams obviously could be potentially a bit of a miss for them with his spin. But yeah, I'm expecting them to be up there, and I've said that a few times. But I think Checkley, it's just literally how those guys gel and how much they get from them in terms of games. So yeah, I think, like I mentioned Checkley as well, didn't I, earlier, it's one of the best cricket grounds that you could probably play at. I mean, I've always played there when it's sunny, which helps. And it's a lovely, picturesque sort of wildcat ground. So yeah, hopefully they'd be right up there, because I've got a lot of time for Checkley, and it's just about how those signings gel, I suppose. So see how that goes.
Rich Williams, bigger loss for Checkley or a bigger gain for Longton? Because I've only ever seen him play I've seen him play against us in the Cup a couple of times. Played against him. I've also seen him play for, I went and had a watch of Staffs one time when he was playing. Good player, good bowler. Was ragging it square on a green seamer when we played against him in the Cup. So, bigger loss for them or a bigger gain for Longton?
That's a good question. I mean, I can't think off the top of my head who Checkley have got as a spinner, other than Hunty, who seems to just play forever. So I'd probably say a bigger loss for Checkley. In terms of how they go about their cricket, if they can't replace what Rich gave them in terms of control, it'll probably be a bigger loss for them. That's not to say, obviously, he's not going to be a big plus for Longton, but yeah, it's probably a bigger miss for Checkley if they can't replace those overs.
Next up in the league was Burslem. Now, Burslem have got Josh Tittensall back as captain. He had a year off last year, but had obviously done it in the past. Titto likes to bait Aid Dunny, really, on Twitter. I think that's fair to say.
He baits everyone on Twitter, does our Titto, doesn't he?
Well, true, yeah.
Am I allowed to say that, or am I at risk of the censorship from the league? Yeah. In fact, I'm sure Titto will probably be on my side there, me saying that in support of his Twitter antics.
Yeah.
Not all of his Twitter antics, obviously. I'm just in support of the ones that I find amusing.
So they've got the same squad, just they've added Zen Malik, obviously staff and former Worcestershire batsman, who we've spoke about being really good on a couple of pods now. And they've added Josh Rhodes, making the step up from Big Land.
Yes.
What do we make of them? They finished seventh, but really they said they want a top five finish this year and they want to try and get quite far in the Cups.
It's quite a youngish kind of team. I talked about transition, obviously, and I think Burslem are going through a little bit of that in terms of not seeing too much of the bowlers. Like Callum Harrison played against us, and Tom Basin didn't actually play against us, but by all accounts, he's decent and bowls it quite well. So I think they're definitely an up-and-coming team. They're getting better. They're definitely not on the decline. They're definitely on the up. So, you know, along with the likes of Kev Mountford and Brownie and these types of guys, I think they've got a good mixture of experience and youth. So, you know, and Josh Rhodes has done well at your place, hasn't he? So be interested to see how he steps up to that. And Zen's obviously... He's Zen, you know, like you said, you've touched on him before, but he's, you know, a high quality player. So, yeah, I think it'll be, you know, a year where they look to really progress and push on rather than being that team that sort of hover around the middle. Yeah, good luck to him.
I'll throw one out here. And I'm not going to say this just because Rhodey is my mate. And, well, I will throw it out there just because he's my mate. But I honestly do think that if it all clicks for Burslem, I reckon they could cause some damage this year. I really do.
Where's he going to bat, you know?
That's a great question. Because for me, I look at them and you think to yourself, on the day, they could all bat bloody top six, couldn't they?
Mm.
I'd like to think that Rhodey would get a go somewhere around five or six. I mean, he's opened up for us in the past. He's batted in the top order. I still think his best position is probably coming in somewhere around five or six. In my opinion, from having played as much with him and being friends with him as I is, I think he's one of the most naturally talented cricketers I've come across in terms of natural ability. I'd kill for his natural ability. Obviously gutted as a mate and playing with him for as long as I have that he's gone, but I'm absolutely chuffed to bits because I I think it could, if it all drops on for him really well, I think it could go really well for him. And I think that stage to kind of test himself against the best, I think he'll go well. Like I say, if it all clicks for him, I think he'll go well. But I hope he gets a good go. Round 5 or 6, I'd say, was where he was best.
Next up is Modishell and Alton. So obviously skipping by Sam Castle, who obviously me and John know a little bit. What do we make of Modern Alton? Obviously, been a club that have been always up and around there, haven't they? So in terms of being in the top two leagues. But I don't think I've really seen any particular big signings for them this year.
No, I think there was talk of, I don't know, yeah, you hear things, don't you? Obviously, I'm trying not to listen to that really, but there's talk of Coakley sort of moving on or whatever, but by all accounts, he stayed where he is, and Coke will be dangerous on any sort of wicket, really. I find him probably one of the hardest bowlers to face in terms of his accuracy and where the hell you can hit the ball because it's got no pace on it. You know, as a batter, Jono and Ash, you probably know yourselves, like I much prefer the ball coming onto the bat. So, you know, anything.
Yeah, generous use of the word batter there. Very towards teammates, I think.
Definitely.
I did sort of think I'd just use Jono in this one, but then I had to put Ash in.
I'm batter, don't bowl, but good for a laugh, that's me.
Yeah, you know, participator.
Yeah, I think having pace on the ball sort of helps as a batter, but Coke's always dangerous. And obviously they've got Kouse, and other than that, you know, they've got a lot of young lads who are up and coming, obviously talented boys, but they probably will be lacking in the experience side. But I know that Kouse will get absolutely everything out of every single person that's going on the pitch, knowing what his character's like. So again, good luck to him. Like Kouse, like the way he does things, very passionate. But he'd probably like a few more experienced lads around to help those younger lads, where it's just not himself that's doing it.
Moving into the bottom four from last year, we've then got Cheadle, got Ali Khan in as their pro. Obviously got Trigger down there, haven't they, as well. Got quite a few recognisable names, I would say, down at Cheadle. I would guess they were probably very disappointed to finish fourth from bottom last year. I think they would expect to be at least mid-table, sort of top half.
I'd say, yeah, incredibly disappointed, really. Now, if you put Ali Khan into their team, they suddenly become challengers for me. You know, we talked about those top three. I do really think Cheadle will be, there'll be a top four, potentially, with Checkley as well. As a top five. Now, you put Ali Khan into any team with that pink ball, he can chase down any target and he can put on any target batting first. And they've got a good rounded bowling attack. And what they lacked last year was Ali Khan, a batter, maybe two batters. So put him into that team, I think they'll be dangerous as anybody. They beat us actually last year, going into the last ball. Yeah, they managed to get over the line. That was a good game at Cheadle. So good bunch of lads up there. Do things properly, do things well, work hard for each other. And Trigg's captain, I think, this time, isn't he?
I think I've seen that Trigg was captain.
I think Craig's finished. So I'm not sure if he's still playing, Craig, but he's not captaining. So yeah, there'll be one to look out for, I think, 100%.
Yeah. Next, then we go on to the other sort of South Moorlands, or one of the other Moorland sides in Ashcombe Park. Ashcombe finished third from bottom last year, but they've made some eye-catching signings. They've obviously got a reasonable squad anyway, and this is now, I think, the fifth or sixth year in the Prem. But they've signed Haroon Mahmood, who's been at Leakin, also Kidsgrove, and is a top-order batsman. They've signed Hamza Sadiq, who I think quite a few people have mentioned actually before on here when we've talked about Ashcombe, who used to be a pro at Derbyshire. And sort of through him, because he's sort of friends with Ross Whiteley and came through with Ross Whiteley, they've signed Ross Whiteley, which I'm sure anyone who watches any cricket over here knows that Ross hits a very, very, very big ball when he wants to. And he also bowls a decent bit of left-arm seam as well, which, if he's available, he's surely going to be one of the best players you would think in the league.
I mean, yeah, I'd say so. It goes back to how much he can play. He's in the first class sort of team for Worcester, isn't he? The sort of one day stuff. He's sort of a nailed on player as an all rounder, more so a batter. So again, go back to the Ali Khan conundrum. If you have a batter like that who can take you apart in 10 overs, it's pretty hard to defend no matter who's bowling at him. So definitely a good signing. They'll probably just be hoping that they'll get him for a lot of games. Tough place to go, Ashcombe. They've been around for a long time, about 5-6 years, as you say, Ash, but a real difficult place to go. We found that in the past. I think other teams that are probably expect to beat them, definitely away from home, find it a lot more tricky with certain aspects that go on around the ground. Not to say that I'm not against it whatsoever. You know, they play towards the home advantage, and yeah, again, good, decent set of lads and play hard, play good cricket really. And Ross will obviously add to the ability that they've got there, along with Josh Johnson and Nate Ball of the likes. So yeah,
hoping he's not available Talbot Cup round one. should they get through, I must say, should they get through their prelim round? But like, I can't say is that I'm looking forward to playing Burslem or Ashcombe Park.
Yeah, I don't think Aiders is he? Bowling at Zen Malik or Ross
Whiteley? Yeah, where are your choices? You can bowl at Zen Malik for the day, or you can bowl at Ross Whiteley instead. Take your choice.
Yeah, they've also apparently got two good spinners. They've got Anis Raza, the all rounder, and then a young lad coming through called Max Elliott, who apparently had quite a good year last year for a 17-year-old coming in.
I remember it from last year, to be fair. Anis has been around for a while, hasn't he? He's a really good left-arm spinner. But, yeah, that Max was a decent prospect, to be fair. So, yeah, I think they're coming to terms with what's needed, so to speak, and what sort of cricketers they need to keep them where they are. So they've done a good job over the last 5 or 6 years. So.
Next to bottom last year, so technically in a relegation spot, was Whitmore. Now, Whitmore have lost, obviously, Joe Bridgewater, who was, you think he was captain still, wasn't he, actually? Or did he give it up the year before?
Matt McCall was the captain last year.
Matt McCall, I should know that. I used to play with Matt McCall. Mm. But they signed Jalak Khan, who we spoke about, I know, the other week when we were on about signings, and we spoke about him being a really good signing. And then the other signing was James Wewell, but he signed for Glamorgan, is it, for 2 years? Mm. So I can't see, or it seems unlikely that it will be available masses. So do we think Whitmore is still going to be down towards the bottom area of the league, or will Jalak Khan make enough of a difference?
Yeah, I mean, Jalat will have to take a lot of the wickets and get a lot of the runs. There's no going past that, really. But I also wouldn't be surprised if Whitmore were trying to sign another player or could try and get somebody else in instead of Whale, whatever his name is. Because obviously not going to see him much, are they? I don't think so. It wouldn't surprise me if they go to get some other player. To try and do the business for him. So, yeah, you know, it is what it is at Whitmore, isn't it? So I'd be surprised if they were challenging, or, you know, I think a halfway finish should probably be what they're sort of expecting this time, if I'm completely honest.
Gone are the days of the last couple of years. You looked at their side a couple of years ago. I think about their side. I think we played them in the 2020, that side that had Yazzie Murtaza in it. Mm-hmm. That was because they nearly got there 1 year, didn't they? Did they finish second or third 1 year?
Yeah, and they won the Talbot Cup along the way as well. They had a really good cup team.
Good side, that was.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Yeah. And then there's obviously still some good players down there. And obviously, I think Beachy, John T will have to do the majority of the work alongside Jalat and another person if they get him in.
And then last but not least, we've mentioned WIRMO already tonight, Justin Mould. Isside Bagnell, obviously been promoted up through all the leagues. Got plenty of names I think people will know, when you look like Greg Willett. And then obviously they've added in this year. Joe Bridgewater and Whitmore, we just mentioned, and they wanted Christy Villian in, but obviously couldn't because of different COVID things. So they've added Bilal Batty for, well, how many times have we mentioned over the last 2 weeks since it was announced that we would not like to be the person facing him at Bagnell on a cold, wet day?
Do you know what I talked to earlier about pace on the ball?
Yeah, not that much pace.
Fairy tales a good story about, I think it was Asad Ali, and Rod Shillings was the pro at Audley. And Asad bowled him a bumper. And Roger sort of went to him, "Is that all you've got?" sort of thing.
I remember, if it's the same Roger Shillings who I remember, mate, he was never shy of a word. It's the same guy we're talking about.
Something along the lines of, "That wasn't quick," or, you know, "That wasn't very quick." And the next ball's obviously whizzed past him or took his lid off. And he got back up eventually off the deck and said, "Not that fucking quick." It was like, "Bowl it quicker." And the next ball was just far too fast for him, sort of thing. But yeah, going back to Bilal, I think, thinking about spells that I've faced in terms of speed, he's definitely number one. He bowled a spell at Meath when they played on quite a flat wicket. A wicket that was getting through, and he was definitely getting it through. I managed to do all right, actually, but it was a real battle. But one that, again, if you do well against him, something to be very proud of. You know, at the end of the day, he's an international bowler, and if he's got your number, he's got your number, sort of thing. So he's going to be definitely interesting down that bank up there with the Bagnell crowd behind him. That'll be very, very interesting.
I hope, you know, that COVID doesn't get the better of that he still does come over, because just for someone who, A, hasn't got to stick his pads on and go out there and face it, so sorry for sticking you out there, John. But I'm just curious to see how generally unpleasant it'll be seeing him stroll down the bank, because this is of no slight of Asif Raza whatsoever, because he was a serious, serious club pro, and he was very, very handy coming down that bank at Bagnell. But to me, Bilal Batty is like another tier above. Mm. And seeing him come down that bank at Bagnell, especially on a wet one. Good luck.
Keep going, mate.
yeah, that's fine. As I say, I haven't got to strap my pads on, so I'm okay. I've had a couple of people either. I remember you just talking about, I think I've mentioned it on the podcast before, I think I got asked the question when we did it like around ourselves, best spell of bowling you've ever faced. And they used to have a pro called Kashif Dowd. Mm. And Kashif was pro for Silverdale, and then he was pro at Bagnell. And I remember we had Kim as pro at the time, Aid Lalo's favourite friend, Kim Barnett. And he was just like, "Oh, yes, mate, he's just bowling out swingers at you," thinking, mm-hmm. "Oh, that's very blasé," on a wet one. And I don't think I saw the first few. And in terms of spells and bowling, it genuinely felt like I was being violated.
Yeah.
That he was literally toying with me like an animal. And I remember Phil White, who's now an umpire, was kind of in his finishing days keeping wicket for Bagnell, and he was basically down the bank somewhere keeping wicket. I could barely see him in the dark, and I just remember turning around and seeing my off stump nearly hitting Phil White in the face because it went back that far.
Yeah,
that was a genuinely unpleasant day. Good luck, mates. Anyway,
up there with Bill, I will probably be. And bear in mind, he only faced two balls. Was Tino Best? The craziest man you could ever meet.
The other week.
He got mentioned the other week, because I think someone described him as the was it Scott Oliver Turner who described him as the biggest loose cannon he'd ever come across in cricket.
Yeah, any sort of phrase like that just sums him up. I mean, again, he played for Leek, I think, when I was at Little Stoke, and I was only young. Again, faced two balls. The first ball was actually five leg side wides. And I was like, didn't see it. Still, you know, didn't see the ball. You know, I'm sort of crapping my pants at 13, 14. And then next ball's obviously just knocked me over. Middle stump, off stump, whatever it was. Probably all three at the time. I was just tumbling all over the place. And he's celebrating as if he's just got Kevin Peterson out or something. You know what I mean? And then he batted, actually. And got 70 odd not out. And as he was batting, he was just singing all the way through. Just like he was hitting sixes and fours and telling us where he was going to hit it and singing. And doing all this kind of stuff. He was it, but then after in the bar, obviously we had a drink with him after as well. So it was a really good experience that. But when he was bowling, he was a nasty bloke, nasty bloke.
I'm sure I've heard plenty of stories about Tino Best offering on 14-year-old batsmen in local league cricket, which seems like he's quite fun off the pitch, but
I heard off the league that he was one of the first overseas, well, it's certainly in modern times, one of the most recent overseas pros to get banned.
He got banned for bowling an intentional beamer, I think.
Yeah, bowling.
Intentional beamer.
Intentional beamers. Mm. Yeah. What didn't... we're getting completely off a tangent here with the Premier League review, but didn't Wood Lane's pro get banned for an incident at your place? Was that at your place? I'm sure it was. He plays first-class cricket now. It was his name, Azizaidi. Quite a big lad.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't actually playing at Portal then. It was when Benga's... Again, name-dropping bad men.
he's been mentioned, mate. Don't worry.
His son doesn't like me, John.
Yeah, I think it was a Benga's sort of classic incident with Azizaidi. And I think Zaidi ended up with the stump out of the ground, sort of running after Bengers, trying to twat him with the stump at some point, I think. So,
yeah, imagine that. The lad's playing first-class cricket for Essex, isn't he? I think he's still playing for Essex.
Yeah.
I can't remember, Essex or Sussex. I just think he started off in this country playing club cricket in Premier Division cricket, and he got banned for chasing an absolute club cricket madman around with a stump. You've got Tino Best, who's got a test 99.
Yeah.
He's got a test 5 for at Lords. He's on the honours board, and he gets banned for bowling intentional beamers at Leek.
It's a shame. we talk about these big name players, which is brilliant for the league, but I don't think we're ever going to get that again. You know, like obviously you had Scott on last week, didn't you? I had him ran to here. Shahid Afridi's played in the league, Tino Best. You know, Imran Farhat, all these kind of international, global names. And it's a shame, really, because you've got all these stories I talk about are about these overseas pros that I've played against, all the best players. And it's I can't see that happening anytime in the future, which is a shame. But because I'm all for these overseas coming over because it improves. I know it has financial impacts on clubs and stuff like that, but ultimately, I believe that it's given me so many more, not memories, but like I learned so much from playing with these people and also playing against them than I would have if they weren't here. You know, I've played with Rao Iftikhar, Ian Butler, you know, all these types of Shabir Ahmed, all these players that, you know, never even dream of playing in any other sport with these kind of esteemed sort of professionals. So I'm an advocate for keeping these pros coming over, but I don't think we get these big names. With all these tournaments that go on now, we've got very little chance of getting the bigger names, haven't we?
I think there's I think you've hit the nail on the head, mate. I think we spoke a few weeks ago, Turner, didn't we? I can't remember who it was. We talked about like overseas professionals and stuff, didn't we, a few weeks ago?
Yeah.
And kind of in a similar kind of vein that you hold some of the names, I think I started talking about, I mean, I've got a picture of him on the bed behind me here just because it's going to get hung up in the club. We had Tahir Mughal as pro. And I remember seeing an article, because he died recently, very, very sad. And Pat Passion, the cricket website, that eventually got printed on Cricket Info as well, described him as the best Pakistani first-class cricketer to never get a test cap.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got nearly 600 first-class wickets, which is a right odd seam of bowling in like Quetta every week, and Islamabad every other week is good going at an average of about 20 odd. And the fact that like I can turn around and say, yeah, I used to go and have a net with him every week.
Mm.
And the fact that I know it was late on in his career and it was a bit of a different one because it wasn't necessarily an overseas pro, but the fact that I get to say that, oh yeah, I've opened the batting with Kim Barnett, who's got two test caps for England. As he kept reminding us at the time, averaged 80 and never got picked again. Got 80 in both innings and never got picked again. But yeah, as you say, we're not going to get, because the best we can probably hope for now is a young lad or a younger lad or maybe a professional who is on the way back down. or a young lad who's not made it, who goes on to success a few years later, they're probably your best chances nowadays, aren't you? Because the amount of, as you say, tournament cricket, the protection that they get, an overseas gig for a first-class cricketer in Pakistan or India is not the same as it was 10 years ago when the likes of us were starting out in senior cricket.
I also think what's important is getting him for 22 games. You know, like we've had it, probably going against the grain a little bit because we've had a couple of South Africans that have left early, but that really 1 year we got unstuck when Bash or Marcelo went home early, and we were winning the league quite comfortably, and then we ended up 6 weeks without one, trying to replace him week after week, and it just didn't fit into our team or anything like that. So it's got his pros and cons, obviously, but I think if you're going to get one, whoever it is, you want him for 22 weeks. Or as many of those weeks as possible, don't you? But I'm not sure what route we'll go down. But if you know, if it works out the way we're doing it at the minute, we'll probably carry on that route. If we can't get the quality of player that we want, is John O gone?
John has disappeared. Oh, he's back. Again. He's having a mare.
Wi-Fi.
It hasn't reached the parish. Fibre optic hasn't. I tell you. Right, then, last thing on the Premier League preview, then we'll finish off with Room 101, is a few predictions. So we're going to have four predictions off everyone. I want a winner of the league, a team to go down. In fact, two teams, because there's two teams in there that goes down. The top run scorer and the top wicket taker. So I'm going to start with Jono, just to put him under a bit of pressure and give John some time to think.
Oh, right, so we're going Premier Division then, yeah?
Yeah, Prem.
We'll okay, what do you want first? You can ask me in order.
Go on then, winner of the league.
Port Hill. Sorry, John, to put ranks on pressure on you. It's not good, John.
Apologise, mate.
Ever Knox, ain't it?
Yeah, well, at least then I can say I've captained a side that's beat the four-time, the John Hancock-led four-time Premier League winners then, because it just makes my story better, you see, every time they win the league or a competition. Yeah, there you go.
Allegation spots.
Oh, tough one. Whitmore and man, that's a hard one because they literally, you look at them on paper, I reckon everyone could beat anyone. I'm gonna go Modishell.
Top run scorer.
Louis Allison.
I'll be honest, John, you're ruining this here, mate, because at the moment you've picked exactly the same as I'd written down, so I'm going to have to change them. And top wicket taker?
Top wicket taker, I'm going to go for Michael Brown. Spinner. Gets wickets all the time, mate. Just gets wickets.
Just gets wickets. Right, gets John, wickets. What are you going, John?
Can I say Port Hill?
Yeah, if you want to. I'm hoping you're going to think you're going to win it.
Fucking hell, yeah. Me too.
I can't say anybody else, can I? So, yeah, Port Hill.
Relegation spots, which I know is not a nice one.
Yeah, not a nice one. Don't take this personally, anybody that's going to listen. I'm going to go along with Whitmore. And it's then between Bagnall, Stone, or Mod. Oh, fucking hell. Can I leave it at that?
Yeah, go on. I'll be generous. Top run scorer.
Michael Hill,
and then top wicket taker.
James Sellers.
Ooh, great shout! I'm just going to throw one out there, by the way, before you start, Turner. In fact, carry on, Turner. I'm going to ask another question. Just on I say it's a personal question. It's not a personal question, but carry on.
I'm going to go Port Hill to win. Relegation, I'm agreeing with Jono as well. I'm going to go Whitmore and Mod. Top run score, I was going to go Louis Allison, but I'm going to change it up now and say Zen Malik. And then
nice.
Top wicket taker, I'm just going to go for the obvious one and go Bilawal Bhatti, assuming that he plays every game. Go on then, Jono, question. Go for it.
I'm going to throw one out there. Something that we've not talked about, because you're... you've got a great one that always sticks in my mind, John. You've got a great staff's cricket story that I always like. I remember talking to my cousin about it before because he didn't know, actually. And I remember Travis's article about it. Jimmy Sellers. I think we played with him, played against him 3 years in a row. I think when Cheadle went all the way back down and then came all the way back up again, we seemed to like follow them down and then follow them up. I believe, certainly from the amount that I've played against, obviously they could well be better, but from the amount that I played against him, one of, if not the best amateur bowlers that I faced. I do remember one day though, because I never ever ever scored a run against him. I genuinely didn't know what I was doing, but I remember Sahail smacked a load of runs up at our place, and we ended up beating them in a great game one day. But is he the best local amateur not to play for Staffordshire?
Well, that is a great question, because we could probably
This is opening a can of worms here, because we could probably name a team and probably a second and third team, couldn't we? But just
I can't disagree with that comment, mate. I really can't, because obviously me saying Jimmy Sellers is obviously, you know, is what I think of him. In terms of who hasn't played for Staffordshire, like I say, that list could be quite long, and I don't really want to get into that. But Jimmy, yeah. High quality bowler. Probably, I get the gist that he doesn't really like cricket that much, but I could be completely wrong. He doesn't really, you know, come across as though he enjoys cricket, but he's a very dangerous bowler, but also a very dangerous batter, and a very good player as an all-rounder.
Just a typical fast bowler then, surely. Just looks like he just isn't enjoying himself,
yeah,
surely.
Yeah, he just looks at you sometimes as if, fuck you doing, John, sort of thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah, like Jimmy, and he's always been at Cheadle, hasn't he? You know, which is also admirable in terms of loyalty, because I'm sure he could have gone elsewhere as well. So yeah, like Jimmy, and I like Cheadle. Yeah, but as long as the list of Staffordshire players that haven't played for Staffs as much as they should have, it's probably a long one. Definitely.
That's a discussion point for a whole podcast about the politics of minor counties cricket and fitting it in around work and stuff, isn't it, amongst other things. I think we'll avoid talking about that one.
I don't know enough about the politics, you see, so this is the kind of thing where I'd end up planting my foot in it, because I haven't got a fucking clue what I'm talking about.
I don't mind talking about it. It's fine. I mean, my not gripe with it, but I just want to see local lads given the chance, and you know, Staffordshire being something that somewhat that local cricketers aspire to. It should be a stepping stone from league cricket, and I think in the last 5 or 6 years, maybe more than that, that's sort of been lost in terms of what lads and where lads should be and what want to do. There's nothing against the lads that play there, and I'm not putting myself in that bracket either. Because, you know, I've played a couple of times and potentially not been good enough, but I think there should have been more chance for these local boys, more than there has been, if that makes sense. Without going too far into the details of the politics, yeah.
point made, mate. And I think, yeah, as someone who will never be near a Staffordshire setup in my life, I think I certainly understand what you're on about.
Yeah. You just want it to be something that, again, people aspire to, and it means something to play for them. I'm sure for those boys that do play there regularly, it does. But I don't really seem to get that vibe, and it's a shame, really, that Staffordshire should be the pinnacle for a club cricketer at the end of the day. And it is, you know, it is. Of course it is. That's not to take away from anybody, but, yeah. That's me done on that.
Right then, I think it's only fair we finish off, as always, with Room 101. Now, Jono, you suggested last week's, you wanted to get rid of names and numbers, and you're going to be absolutely distraught because names and numbers on whites have been saved.
Fucking club cricket, it's a fucking embarrassment. Anyone who's got names and numbers in club cricket should be fucking embarrassed with themselves.
Who has? I don't see many.
Oh, well, mate, we've had some lads, no word of a lie, and maybe it's just personal to us, right? We've had lads literally take their whites to Pete and to Menzies and get their names and a random number printed on their whites. And, like, honestly, second team lads, initials on whites as well. I can deal with initials on coloured clothing. I had to make that allowance because I've done that in the past. Like, I would not mind my initials on a set of colours or training gear or whatever, but fucking names and numbers on whites in club cricket. Oh, God. Give me strength. No, it's a no. I can't fucking believe it.
I mean, I've struggled with this because, I've been thinking about it all day and I can't really come up with it. And we touched on earlier the positive changes of the league, so I want to try and talk positively about it because I would have said about the T20, now that's been changed. I would have said about the power plays in the 30-yard circle, that's been changed. You know, so I've got a comment, first of all, on the positive changes because I do all think they're really good. And I heard Scott's one last week was about lads moving. Was it? Lads
moving. Under-21s moving loads of clubs.
For different reasons, which I'm sure we all know about. So I was really struggling, I'll be honest. I've not really got something that I really feel passionate about that I would change. We talked, as early start's been talked about.
Yeah, Steve Croft was the man who wanted an early start because he wants to get on the beers.
Yeah.
Of all people.
Which professional cricket hero there.
Which is, you know, pretty obvious, isn't it? You know, and maybe one to think about is if we want to, you know, shorten the game is to have a bit of a shorter tee. I thought about maybe not having an half an hour, maybe just having 15, 20 minutes. Because I know
that could be a great one, mate, especially this year, certainly starting out with no tees, because there's nothing more frustrating last year.
Yeah, I mean, and the umpires probably disagree with it because they love a tee, don't they? But I mean, like for me personally, if we fielded first and then I've got half an hour to then think about how I'm going to bat, I prefer just to go in and have a quick sandwich or a quick oat cake or whatever it might be, tub of pasta, and get out there rather than I sort of stiffen up. And a few lads have mentioned this as well. If we batted or we fielded to then go out and bat or field again, you sort of seize up and sort of lose that sort of momentum. So if I was to say something, I know it's probably not a great one, but if we could shorten the length of how long we take at tea, because, you know, you could have a nap at tea, couldn't you, and still be all right before you go out again, sort of thing. So, yeah, make that tea time a bit shorter.
I'm actually a real big fan of that because I'm
gets mad honest, about that. Yeah.
Last year, total agreement. I actually preferred just turning up, having literally just bringing like a bag of crisps and banana, nailing it, going straight back out again, and then having like a burger or a takeaway or curry or whatever the club.
And again, you've got time after the game, haven't you, to do whatever you want with. So
we had a couple of weeks where we came to an agreement with the other team and the umpires because we weren't having a tee that we'd just have 10 minutes for a turnaround, and they were the best weeks.
Mm.
And then I started getting pissed off at the people who were resistant to it because I saw how good it was the previous week. And then if someone said no, to just sit around then for 25 more minutes than you necessarily needed to.
Yeah,
just
you don't need that time. Sense. I think 10, 15 minutes could be cut off from the 30 minutes tee time, 100%. You don't need that time, I don't think.
No.
Right.
That's me.
So we'll put that to the vote. Hopefully people will agree this week because I still can't believe names and numbers are stayed on whites. That's a joke.
Getting Stephen Croft's vote anyway. Tea time. Yeah, fuck it
he'll
off.
Be happy with that.
Yeah.
So that is basically us done for the week. So big, big thanks to John for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have him on and talk about the Prem and Port Hill. And hopefully plenty of people will listen to it and won't hate me and Jono, and obviously not hate John as well. So big thanks for joining us, John.
No problem at all. I hope I've not bored you all to tears or bored you all to death, but I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for having me on, boys.
No problem. John. We hope to have you on at the end of the season when you've proved our prediction right and won the league.
Seems as though I've tipped four people for relegation, I'm probably not in the best books for some of the clubs.
You might get reminded of it from Slip early in the season.
Probably, yeah.
So, big thanks to everyone to John, and obviously big thanks to everyone who's listening out there. Great to see the numbers keep going up, so please keep following, subscribing, reviewing, sharing it with other people, especially around North Staffs, because we're going to be talking about them every week. And next week we're hopefully, touch wood, going to have Chris Travers on with us to talk about Divs 1, 2 and 3, and we'll give them a little preview. So again, if anyone is involved in any of the teams, send us a bit of info so we know a little bit more about what we're talking about, because I think me and John will be pretty honest and say we know a few people, but not. We don't know the ins and outs of every team by any stretch. Before we go, as always, once more, big shout out to Woodstock for supporting us. Make sure you use our discount code. And as with every week, I'd just like to finish with Jono just giving a quick shout out to our fundraiser.
Yeah, so thank you. I've had quite a few messages in the last few days, actually, and I noticed the Just Giving GoFundMe pages had a few more hits. The Danny Hughes Memorial Fund in association with Cardiac Risk in the Young do some great work. I know, John, I know at Port Hill you have a big association with a cry day. I know it wasn't, presume it didn't go ahead last year like I was doing, great cause for the Hughes family. So if you want a bat sticker as well to support the podcast and also to support Cardiac Risk and the Young, we're asking for a minimum of £3 donation if you want. I'd like to thank the lads at Burslem Cricket Club. They probably don't know it yet, but they're having one. But the lads at Burslem have ordered a sheet of bat stickers and the donation has come through me. I'm actually looking at my phone now. That's who I'm speaking to. So the lads from Burslem are all going to have a bat sticker and in support of Cardiac Risk of the Young. So really appreciate that from the lads. So there is a GoFundMe link available on our social media accounts. And if you just drop us a message, make the donation or send us a message and we'll send you them through in the post. And any support for the podcast and for the Danny Hughes Memorial in association with Cry, big, big thank you.
We'll put towards that as well. So can we do the same as whatever Burslem have done? So we'll have a sheet or a sticker sheet or whatever, and we'll pile in some money, no problem.
I can bring them up. Are you up at Port Hill on Thursday, John? I'll bring them up. If not, I'll bring them up sometime over the weekend.
Yeah. And the link is there to pay into, isn't it? So
yeah,
just links giving. On Twitter, Facebook. It's a Just Giving link. It's definitely in our bio, isn't it, Turner?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, sort of. No problem.
Top man. Thank you to Port Hill as well. Then we can compete these Premier Division clubs off. We'll get a bit of reach out there. The Burslem and Port Hill lads. Port Hill have got about five sides, so if we can get them across all five sides, we'll be making a good donation to Cry at the end of the year.
And to be fair, Benny Howell has asked me to send some down to Gloucestershire as well, so it's not just us lot. Steve Croft and the Lanks boys have had a few. Gloucestershire are going to have a few, so, you know, be like the pros and all that.
Yeah, be like the pros. The Lancashire lads have got them on the bats. We've had video evidence, Turner, haven't we? Stephen Croft got one on his bats.
Proven. So I think we'll leave it there, boys. Thank you for another great episode. Thank you to everyone who is listening. Have a great week. Enjoy your pre-season friendlies. Let's hope there's no snow. And we'll see you next week for the final podcast before the season starts. Cheers.
Looking for a new cricket equipment partner for yourself or your club can sometimes be tricky. With so many options to choose from, how do you make the right choice? When you want quality, value and service, there really is only one place to start. For more than a decade, Woodstock Cricket have been producing award-winning, high-performance cricket bats from their Shropshire workshop. Matched with their classy soft goods, luggage and accessories, Woodstock Cricket really do tick all the boxes. Get in touch with Woodstock Cricket and find out why many loyal clubs, players and international customers can't be wrong at info@woodstockcricket.co.uk.
Down at Third Man, the cricket podcast, proudly supported by Woodstock Cricket.